Hello, everyone. Welcome again to another episode of What the Hell? And it's kind of an odd show because we're going to talk about something that's pretty sad, but also pretty complicated. It's the death of Michael Jackson. It was 10 years ago, and it was such a chaotic thing that happened back then. With me right now, DJ Head from Real 92.3, and you were just a young kid then, right?
Yeah.
25, give or take.
Yeah, 25. 10 years ago, yeah, I was 25. I remember watching it on TV, and it was interesting to me because I had never seen anything like that up until recently, obviously, with the passing of my good friend Nipsey Hussle, like with the Staples Center, and it was just so grand, you know what I'm saying? And then it seemed like the whole world for like that week or that day at least stopped, and all eyes were glued to the TV. People were listening to you, watching you. People were talking about it, tweeting about it, posting about it. You know, a lot of people were crying. Some, the select few people were cheering. So it was just, it was very interesting to see, like, especially in my lifetime.
You know, it was mostly tears. Because yeah. I was covering the story. I was sent to Hollywood where people were gathering around a Michael Jackson star. Now, I don't know if you know this story, but there were a couple of different guys named Michael Jackson. One of them was a radio announcer.
Didn't know that.
That's the star that everybody went to and put flowers on.
Wow.
And the reason they did that was because the other one that was Michael Jackson's was hidden over by the theater where Sacha Baron Cohen was premiering a new movie. And so nobody could get to
it.
Nobody
could get to it.
And so when they got to the boulevard and they saw, oh, Michael Jackson, that's what they all gravitated to, only to find out later it wasn't him. But they stayed there anyway.
But don't the stars have the little indicator?
They do. And the indicator there was it wasn't Michael Jackson, correct, the singer. It was Michael Jackson with a microphone.
With a microphone.
The broadcaster.
Gotcha.
But that, you know what? People's hearts were in the right place.
Yeah, for me, it's all about intent. I feel like the intention was pure. So
it was pure. And one of the things that I discovered as I was going over there trying to sort of, first of all, I had to get my own bearings because this was a pretty big shocker to everybody. And I walked into pretty much a sea of tears. It was just so many people who were upset. They were crying. A lot of people, they were calm. They were composed. But they were sitting there meditating. They were writing poems. They had written notes. They had put out flowers, teddy bears, candles, whatever. And it was a real surreal scene. It really was. And people were really heartbroken in many cases.
I think that it was mixed emotions, especially from, you know, my community. I feel like it was a lot of mixed emotions because we're very passionate about the people that we choose to love, and we're very guarded in that sense. But then also, you know, with all the allegations and like different things, the rumors that have been for years, even ever since I was a kid, I heard the Michael Jackson rumors. Like, and I didn't even understand.
Well, they dogged what him they forever. Meant. They dogged him forever.
Yeah, I didn't even fully understand what you know, child molestation was, and I heard about these allegations against Michael Jackson. So I think it was like a melting pot of different opinions and emotions.
A lot of people didn't ever believe these things. And even after the documentary, which some people took very seriously, and it changed their minds and attitudes about Michael Jackson, others not at all. In fact, I talked to a fan in London who told me it's completely debunked. I don't have any idea who completely debunked it because I haven't found that person. But, you know, the fans, they don't want to believe that.
No. I mean, we all know this, which is a fairly new concept. Once you're found guilty in a court of public opinion, that's what it is.
Especially in social media.
Exactly. And that's why I feel like it's a newer concept. It's not something that the world is used to because everything that I knew about Michael Jackson, especially when it comes to allegations, came from the media because I had no other way to consume content. I had no other way to get my information outside of radio, television, maybe a magazine or two. But there was no access to the internet in the palm of my hand like that. I couldn't research things on my own because I was so young. So I think now that people can go back and they can reach, you can literally go in your wallet, in your pocket or in your purse, pull out a phone and do hundreds of hours of research on a specific topic. It changed everything.
Yeah. It did. And, you know, I sat in Santa Maria in the courtroom in the trial. I sat there. I was there every day for it must have been 4 or 5 months. I was covering that story.
That's crazy.
And I'd see Michael every day. I'd see the family, Janet, Latoya, mom, dad. They were in the courtroom every day. And it was kind of interesting. There was a gag order by the judge in the case. And so we sort of had a way of trying to talk to Michael. He'd come out at the end of the day, and each day one of us would be chosen to say, "Hey, Michael, how you feeling?" Or, "Hey, Michael, what did you think of the testimony?" But the thing is that Michael could never say anything more than, "Thank you," you know, because he had a gag order.
Gotcha.
And he couldn't comment. But we would see him, and he that trial was pretty tough on him.
Do you think that the court of public opinion would have been beneficial or detrimental to him had it been around during the trial?
Are you talking about the documentary?
No, I'm just saying the way things are now with the court of public opinion.
Right.
Once you're convicted, you're done. No matter if you're vindicated or not.
Right.
Do you think that would have been beneficial or to his detriment had that been a thing 10 years or when you were going to his trial?
I think it's hard to say.
Gotcha.
It's hard to say because you could have one side that's out defending him and you could have the other side that's out attacking him.
Mm-hmm.
So how do you square that? You can't square that.
No.
But you know, the it's a double-edged sword because one side can become like a wildfire online. Something is said and it takes off.
Facts.
Facts or fiction, it takes off.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, could it help? Could it not help? Could it hurt? Could it not hurt? All of the above.
Gotcha.
It could do all of the above. And I think, you know, I think that it was a widely, widely covered case. I mean, there was so much media there. I'd never seen so much media covering a particular case for such a long period of time. And a lot of the things in the documentary we were hearing in the trial, were hearing in the court.
Yeah.
And the jury didn't buy it.
Right.
The jury didn't buy it.
Right.
And so that was the court of law, And now you have a documentary which spells out what two guys are saying, and now you have the court of public opinion.
I think that also, I mean, I do want to assign some of that responsibility on the people involved, and I don't want to get into, like, victim blaming and all that kind of stuff, but I do believe that the parents have to own some responsibility for these things that they believe are facts now, because I'm not saying that it's fact. I wasn't there. So I can't say whether it's true or not. The man was found innocent. I have to just go with that because obviously the jury had more information than I do.
Right.
What I'm saying is that I know growing up, especially where I grew up in the neighborhoods that I grew up in, it take a village, you know, not to be old school like my grandma used to say, but it takes a village, right? So if I'm not at home, someone on the block knows where I am, right? So I have to apply that ideology in the same way that I remember, like, a friend of mine wanted to come over and stay the night. We play video games all night, stuff like that, right?
Right.
Their parents would come and, like, walk through the house, like, to see if there's bugs, to see if it's sanitary, talk to my mom, see what's going on, making sure the environment was cool. And they would do this repetitively before they would even allow my friends to come over.
Right.
And so I find it hard-pressed to believe that these people would just leave their children with someone, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
And literally just, oh, yeah, he's fine. He's over there in another house. And we're over here in this house. And then their hotel rooms get further and further away. It's like, you have to wear some of that responsibility. You can't just be, I mean, I do understand the severity of the issue that this man may be a monster. This man may be a predator. This may be all of those things. But you also have to take an accountability that you are also a parent. You have legal guardianship over these children. My mom didn't let me do nothing without going and checking it out. And she was a single mom. You know, she had two jobs. But if she didn't check it out first, I couldn't go.
You know, we used to have kids all the time at the house. All my children's friends would come over.
Right.
And then my kids would go to other people's houses. But never was there a case where a child of mine would ever go stay with an adult.
Correct.
Without any children.
Exactly.
And that's where some of this HBO documentary studies why that occurred, why the parents did that, all that sort of thing. And that's what you're talking
about. That's exactly what I'm talking about, especially when it comes to someone who's a grown man. Now, I'm not going to defend Michael Jackson, but what I'm going to say is that I believe that there is something that we don't know about Michael Jackson, whether it be one of my friends brought up Peter Pan syndrome. Someone else, another one of my friends, has a theory about him being a virgin and how he had never been with a woman and doesn't really know how intercourse works like that. And then there's obviously what we saw in the documentary. So it's just so many different theories and perspectives and ideologies on what's going on and what's up with him. I definitely believed that this is not a normal thing. This is not a normal case, especially when it comes to someone who is, let's say, 35 years old and believing that this 10-year-old is your friend, your best friend. You know what I'm saying?
I do.
I believe that it has to be something else, unless, you know, it's just beyond us. It's beyond my understanding.
I think it's all a puzzlement to some degree, but there are a couple of things that struck me. One is that Wade Robson, who is one of the two men in this program, who became a very successful choreographer,
correct?
You know, for Britney Spears and for other people, really good dancer, and he credits Michael Jackson for that, understandably, because he started trying to be like Michael dancing when he was 7 years old. So his career, he believes, is because of Michael. But the only thing about the documentary, I think people should see it, not to get an opinion of what happened, what didn't happen, but to sort of understand some of what we were not able to understand during the court trial. Because Wade Robson, for instance, one of the two accusers, says when he was in court, he lied. He said Michael did nothing.
Exactly.
And then, you know, so now he says Michael did something. So there's a little bit of difficulty squaring with that.
Here's the thing. If we were in court, right?
Right.
And a witness says DJ Head did this crime, right?
Right.
And then we say we stayed in court for 20 years, just for whatever reason, the trial goes 20 years. And then the guy comes back and says, you know what, DJ Head didn't do this. The witness would then be not uncredible, right? And we would discredit the witness, and then that would be it.
Right.
So what I'm saying is, I'm not saying that it did or did not happen, but also there has to be some sort of rationale applied to what the hell is going on.
Right. What the hell? What the hell?
Exactly.
You know, I want to, this is a good point to do this. You know, first of all, there are fans out there that are true blue and always will be, and they'll always adore Michael Jackson. And they believe that none of this is true, that it is not true what this documentary shows. And that's their opinion, and everybody's entitled to their opinion. By the same token, the family. I heard Katherine Jackson say that Wade Robson was lying through his teeth. Mm-hmm. So the family is on the defensive as well. Now, we interviewed Siggy Jackson. That's Jackie's son. And why don't we listen to a few minutes of that? Because I thought this was a really great conversation. Let's take a listen.
He was taken from us, Al. You know, I remember my grandmother and them having their anniversary, and that was the last time I saw my uncle, and it was funny, he kept staring at me and looking at me saying, you know, come and talk to me. And I finally went and talked to him, and he goes, what would you like to do, Siggy? And I said, well, you know, what do you mean? I'd like to do a lot of things. He goes, no. As a man, what would you like to do? We know what our family does. We know what we're capable of. What would you, Sigmund Jackson, like to do as a man? And I never got that chance to tell him. I got a call that next day. One of our friends actually crashed on a motorcycle near UCLA, and I got the call from a friend of mine whose name is Marcel, and he called me and said, your uncle is over here, he's dead. I had to call my father, and from there, my father told me, you have to call your grandmother. People forget, you know, it went from Michael, and before Michael, there was my Uncle Tito's wife who had been murdered. It literally just went literally like bang, 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 bang to my grandfather.
When you found out about Michael and you were over in that area, take us a little further through that day.
It was really an odd day. It was a calm day, and we had just had an anniversary. My uncle had finally said, you know, I'm not going back to Neverland anymore, because of the Bat case and, you know, just Santa Barbara and Los Olivos themselves. It was almost a numbing day, Hal. I was sitting there messing with my bike, and just later I got a call. My friend calls me and says, hey, one of our boys went down, and I think your uncle is dead over here. And I said, come on, man. He said, we're blocking the front of the entrance. We're not letting nobody in. And he took a picture and sent me a picture of my uncle laying there on the coroner's table. when they were bringing in a few bodies, and I went, okay, how do I bring this to my family? It seems like this has always been kind of like my burden. I had to tell my cousins what happened to my Aunt Dee Dee. I had to break the news to my grandmother. And when the day breaks down to it, all of the Jackson stuff goes out the window. And the only thing you think is, Jesus, I coulda, shoulda, woulda spent more time with him. But, you know, since we've been young, he's been a busy man. This was a man who couldn't just, like, me and you could walk out right now, go sit down, have a lunch, and a few people might walk up, hey, Hal. You know, they might not know who I am, but Michael could not walk outside without causing chaos.
Everybody knew him.
Everybody knew him. So, you know, when I hear people like Wade and Dan say, oh, I didn't know who Michael was, people in the jungles know who Michael
well,
was.
Well, now you're referring to this HBO documentary, and we can't really litigate that very much, because that's what Wade Robson was in. But, I think the question here is that there was a lot of negativity over the decades. It wasn't just this one thing. And so you were always kind of living under a cloud?
Yeah, well, the thing is how that breaks down to business, too. So, you know, I mean, they've been, once my uncle Soda Say antennas went up, you know, they say he died one of the highest paid artists of all times. Okay, well, one of the highest paid artists was only getting paid $1.25 off of each of his albums. You think about that. When have you ever seen a Michael Jackson album go for less than $20 or $30?
This is it. And when I say this is it, it really means this is it.
At 50, he shouldn't have been touring. At 60, he shouldn't have been touring. He should have been doing a show, maybe two a year, but he still had to do world tours because that was the only money he could actually make. All I wanna say is that they don't really care about us. Isn't it funny that he went to bed owning majority of Sony, and now he's in the grave? Right when his antennas came up and he said, wait a minute, I don't need to do any more albums. If you notice, all of his albums, down to Blood on the Dance Floor and everything, they were just updated versions with one or two new songs. And that was to say, hey, you know what? I'm going to keep the best for me. I'm going to put it out and give it to the public. People, for some reason, have tend to say, okay, these are the Jacksons. This is what they stand for. This is what they're about. And they make their choice. And then you have the people who say, hey, we love them no matter what goes wrong, whatever happens. This cloud has always followed you, whether it be business, whether it's, I could walk by somebody and just say, hey, I'm Jackie Jackson's son. And they'd be like, I don't like your father. I didn't like what your uncle stood for. That has nothing to do with
me. How'd you deal with that?
You know, after all the years, my uncle used to say there's no such thing as a bad comment. I feel like this. If I put out, let's just say, a car, if you don't like my car this year and you know everything about it, well, that's a win in my corner. I hope you buy my car next year and you don't like it either. It's nothing personal. I feel it was business. So as long as they keep talking, they can't kill the legacy. Because my uncle said the truth runs marathons.
Just kind of wrap it up. What would you like us to think about as we think back on the 10th anniversary of your uncle's passing?
I would have to say, one, Unc, man, I miss you. I miss him as a person. And please, everybody out there, I mean, no matter, and everyone's entitled to their own opinion. Don't forget the type person he was. Don't forget what he stood for. He was a person of the people, and he truly was one of the few angels that actually walked this earth. And this is, as I look at these pictures, people don't understand. I grew up as a kid watching my uncle in the pool wearing a T-shirt. And he'd say, oh, I have vitiligo. And then seeing over all the years as he changed and said, you know what? I don't care what other people say. I'm going to put myself out there as a person. They're going to accept me or they're not. But I'm still going to give them everything I have.
Thank you, Siggy.
Thank you, Hal.
What do you think of that interview with Siggy?
I thought it was good. Like I said, we were talking earlier. I do think that it's dope. It's a good thing to have perspective. Like I data mine. So like I want all perspectives, even if I don't agree with it. I want, like, Siggy obviously coming from the standpoint of the family, and he misses his uncle, and the trauma that it caused the family to have all of this stuff going on about how him being broke, essentially. Not you and I broke, but Michael Jackson broke, right? Him having to go out on the road and work for a living and not making the money that he's supposed to make.
Yeah, I was surprised a little bit by that buck and a quarter an album.
Exactly. And so, like, those things provide perspective to give you reason, and then you can apply it to other things. So it'd be like, well, why did you take that job doing this when you have a successful job at Fox? oh, well, I only make $1.25 an hour at Fox. It's just it's a good opportunity. It's a good platform. Oh, now it justifies the ends justify the means. You know what I'm saying? So I think like him working the way he did, staying on the road and stuff like that, can also attribute to some of his behavior.
Probably. That's probably true.
You know, yeah. Him being isolated, I remember specifically growing up one time when I saw in the news that I believe he locked himself in a hotel room or something like, it was something to that. Yeah. And it was just like, he just wanted to be alone and he only wanted his friends around. That's not normal behavior for a superstar of that magnitude, someone that is on top of the world, literally, right?
Right. But, you know, he's also a human being.
Correct.
And, you know, if he wants private time, he's going to have to demand it because there may be a lot of people around him that aren't going to let him have it if he doesn't demand it and lock himself in a door. That could probably be justified that way. But there were so many instances, the baby over the balcony and things like that, that just didn't seem right.
I think that I remember watching that on TV when I was a kid. And I didn't get it then because I was just like, oh, he's just, you know, just trying to show everybody the baby. Like, I didn't get the big deal. And then when I realized as I got older, like, oh, you know, the baby, they're like way up there on the, and then he hangs the baby over and it was like, okay. I don't necessarily know if, I'm not sure because I don't have context. I don't know what was happening. I don't know why he did that to prove a point. I don't have context, everything is nuance.
Yeah.
I don't have enough nuance to tell you if that was a good or a bad thing or if that was stupid or not. But I do think that, you know, people play. I didn't look at that as, we should take his kids for child endangerment.
You heard Ziggy say he was a clown.
Exactly. I didn't look at that as malicious is what I'm saying. I didn't look at him hanging the kid over the balcony as like, oh, my God, we need to call CPS. I didn't look at it that way. Even as an adult, I don't look at it that way because we do things all the time that probably aren't the best practices. You know, maybe it's, I'm going to run across the street without a seatbelt. You know, I'm driving to the cleaners or I'm going to the grocery store. I don't put my seatbelt on. Like, we all do questionable things depending on the circumstance. I don't think that he was doing that with the intent of being malicious.
Let's switch gears a little bit because I want to talk about his music for a second.
Yeah.
I mean, I think I probably know every one of his songs and most of the words to a lot of them.
Yeah. I think the music, to me, I can separate the two. I know a lot of people can't do that. I think that the music is timeless. It definitely will outlive probably us, for sure.
Yeah.
And I do think that people should keep in mind, like, if the music wasn't made out of malice. I know this is not how the world works. Believe me, I'm perfectly aware that I'm in my own world on this. But I believe everything should be based on intent. Everything across the board, how we live, what we say, what we do, how we communicate with one another. And so the music that Michael Jackson was putting out had general pure intent, in my opinion. Heal the world, you know, black and white.
We are the world.
The messaging in the music to me was bar none.
Right.
And even to this day, like, you can listen to Michael Jackson music. It's timeless. Not only is it timeless, but you can listen to it and understand the messaging. And the music is 20 years old, 30 years old.
Look at the variety. I mean, Billie Jean, Ben, all these different songs with all kinds of different beats.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, he was all over the map on different kinds of things, and they were all good.
It was all good. And I think that even Moonwalker, like, just certain things that we'll listen to right now. I think it's important for people, even if you hate this man, right? You still have to understand that the messaging in the music was of pure intent, in my opinion. That's just me speaking for me.
Well, you know, Ziggy said that he was a good person, mm-hmm. that he was a man of the people.
Mm-hmm.
And so I guess that's how the family wants to view him. As somebody who was out there for the people, putting music out there for the people, giving them a reason to have some kind of joy, I guess.
Even as philanthropy.
Yeah.
You know, stuff like that. Like, through music, for instance, everybody's familiar with the term kill two birds with one stone. So if I get booked to go do a show in Africa, he was out there, you know, in the villages, whatnot, doing this humanitarian, you know, due diligence. But that doesn't take away from what he was doing behind closed doors and stuff like that, but it does you have to take that into consideration, because no one would want only their bad reel shown, you know, only the highlight reel of negativity being the judge, jury, and executioner of your legacy. So I think that you have to. Now, me personally, I do believe a lot of the things that, you know, were said in about Michael Jackson. But like I said, what you said about the music, I'm able to separate the two.
The man and the music.
Yeah, correct.
10 years ago, the music died. I mean, he probably had a lot more stuff in his head and probably a lot more things he wanted to write. And we lost him 10 years ago. And, you know, your thoughts about that?
For me, it was just its impact. Like, I always relate. It's three different things that I noticed, especially being, you know, born and raised here in Los Angeles. I'm from the east side of, I'm from LA. So I think that it was three things. One, it was Tupac. Two was Michael Jackson. And then three, my friend Nipsey Hussle.
Yeah.
I wasn't around for Tupac. I didn't have a personal relationship with Tupac. I wasn't connected to him in that way. The same goes for Michael Jackson. Michael Jackson to me is no different than any other superstar that I don't know, that I just connect with on their music or connect with what they're doing in the public eye. I didn't know them. The direct impact of my friend Nipsey passing to me was devastating. And so I try to correlate that in my mind to the past generation with Michael Jackson.
One of the things, and I am going to switch to Nipsey for a second, because yeah. You mentioned him a couple of times. I never got to meet him.
Yeah.
But I certainly know a lot about him.
Yeah.
And I did cover the procession with the hearse and you know, all the people that were lining the streets and all of that. Leah Uko here has done some great stories on Nipsey. The thing that Nipsey kind of did that Michael Jackson did was philanthropy.
Correct.
And the thing that impressed me about Nipsey Hussle was what he was trying to do for the community.
Yeah.
That he was trying to give back in a way that really a lot of artists don't necessarily give back.
Correct. I think that when you look at someone, like when you look at entertainers, they're almost like action figures. You know, they're tangible because they're real, but they're not. You don't look at them as like human almost. That's how we kind of idolize entertainers and stuff like that, you know, but Nipsey wasn't that. Nipsey was, I think everyone that knew Nip, but even if you didn't know Nipsey, but even if you just saw him in the streets or whatnot, you looked at him like, that's me.
Really?
Yeah, because it was, you can reach out and touch Nipsey. Like he was everywhere.
He's accessible.
He was super accessible, you know, which obviously worked to his detriment, but he was very accessible. In the correlation to a Michael Jackson situation, Michael Jackson's not accessible.
Never.
Never been accessible. I've never seen Michael Jackson anywhere. I've never seen a Michael Jackson motorcade. I've never seen any of that, you know? And so I think the difference in it is the impact. For someone that you don't know at all to have you in tears over their passing, you know, thousands of people, Staples Center, lying in the streets, like you said, at the Hollywood Walk of Fame, at the wrong star. Like, it doesn't matter. They just need to express themselves, right?
Right.
And this is someone you've never met.
Right. But you feel you know because he came into your life.
Correct. That to me, that's impact that can, you can't deny that.
Even today, thinking back to Paris's comments at Staples Center about her dad, brings a tear.
Yeah.
It's the child mourning the father, and that takes you back to the real-life family.
Yeah, it humanizes everything, and I think that we're all human at the end of the day. You know, we all make mistakes. We all do stupid excuse me. We all, like—
Can we do that on a podcast? Can we say that? I think
yes.
We can.
Yeah,
okay. Okay.
We all do stupid and I think that in those moments of raw humanity, you have to have some— I'm learning compassion as I get older. I used 10 years ago, I had no compassion. I'm going to be honest with you. Like, I didn't understand what compassion was because that wasn't how I was raised. The, oh, you know, come here. Like, it was just like my mom was a single mom, you know, whatever. She would just come in and tell me the truth, like, just straight up. Like, hey, so-and-so passed away. You know, funeral's going to be in 2 weeks. And then she'd just go to work. Like, it was no bereavement. There was no grieving. There was none of that. It was just like, hey, you know what, The lights, the electricity is going to be turned off for a week until I get paid. So she's just bringing candles, light the candles, take all her food out of the refrigerator, put it in the freezer so that way it stays good. That was it. It was just haphazard. There was no like.
Everything was a matter of fact.
Everything was a matter of fact. So I think that to me desensitized me in the grieving process as well growing up. So now that when I see people pass like Michael Jackson, it doesn't hit me as like it does when Nipsey passed because I didn't know them personally. I know Nipsey. Nipsey was in my phone. Like he was my friend, he was the homeboy. So for me, that was like a different connection. But I still can't deny, no matter how much we villainize Michael Jackson, you still can't deny the impact that he made in people's lives.
Right.
No matter what he did.
Right.
Because there are people that don't know him losing their
right.
Right?
Yeah. No. Absolutely. There were people who were at the hospital who just wanted to hear somebody say it's not true.
Right.
You know, but they didn't know him personally at all.
Yeah.
But I think, you know, it's funny because I think especially superstar entertainers or entertainers across genres, I think we feel like we know them. Mm. I think, you know, look, you're on the radio all the time. People Correct. Think they know you.
That's a fact. People you know? Come up to me all the time. But I also put myself out there. I don't hide anything. So I think when you're elusive, like Michael Jackson was very elusive. You didn't really know. Only thing you knew about Michael Jackson is what they wanted you to know about Michael Jackson. You didn't really know. You didn't know what his favorite color, you know, Skittle was.
I don't.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
now that you mention it. What's your favorite color Skittle?
I don't have one. I'm a chocolate person.
I like strawberry.
Yeah.
Now you know.
Now I know. But those are the different little nuances that I feel you know certain people to a certain degree, and even entertainers, mega stars. If you learn little bits and pieces about them, it helps you connect with them more.
All right. Bottom line, what we talk about a conflicted legacy. What is there a conflicted legacy for Michael Jackson? And if so, what is it?
Absolutely. There's the people that hate him and the people that love him. And then there's everyone else. That's how I look at it. I don't think that there's any more groups. Those are the three groups. There are people who love Michael Jackson and don't care about none of the other stuff. There are people that hate Michael Jackson and don't care about none of the music or none of the philanthropy or none of the other humanitarian efforts. And there are people who just don't care.
I think on that note, we probably ought to just kind of say it's another year. It's the 10th anniversary of this man's death. And we remember. We remember the music. We remember the man. We remember the problems he had. And we continue to see, even in death, that he continues to be dogged by negativity and remains conflicted.
But I also think entertainers need to keep that in mind as far as like when you're building your legacy. Make sure that you understand that if you become that, you know, you are an end result of your choices.
It's all true. DJ Head.
Yes.
What a nice guy. Thanks for being
Thank
here.
You for having me.
92.3. And thanks for joining us here on What the Hell. Look, if you haven't subscribed already, they should,
subscribe.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Subscribe.
What the Hell?
What the Hell?
What the Hell?
What the Hell?